Hi, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Safety Podcast. We're picking up momentum in 2019. And this week on the show, we have Alex Burbage. Alex now runs his own consultancy, but earned his stripes in the telecoms industry, working for a number of years and ending up as the head of health and safety for O2. This is the first episode of a two-part series where Alex is coming on to talk about how to engage your audience and influence at different levels in an organization. To give you a little flavor of what we discuss in this episode, Alex takes us through his backstory of how he got into health and safety and starts to talk about the development of his soft skills and why he thinks that was so important to how he progressed his career. We also go on to talk about how to deal with different management styles, the importance of adjusting your approach to improve engagement with your audience, and don't forget to listen out for the number one skill that Alex reckons that we should all be focusing on.
Welcome to the Safety Podcast with your host, all the way from a small green island in the wild Atlantic Ocean, Richard Collins.
Okay, Alex, thank you very much for coming on to the Safety Podcast. How's things going?
Yeah, it's really well. Thanks, Richard. Yeah, just a couple of, probably near almost a year since I left O2 as group head of safety. So it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah, so you were at O2 for quite a number of years. Tell us a little bit more about your background and how you've sort of got to the point where you are now, owning your own business and doing your own consulting.
Yeah, so it's one of those stories that obviously starts back in your childhood. I'm not going to bore you with all that because you could be here all day with this one. But yeah, it kind of goes something like this. So really kind of finding my feet after school where I probably didn't perform too well and wondering what I really wanted to do. And unfortunately, I did actually have an industrial accident in a workshop when I was a motor vehicle engineer. And with that kind of really found ideas around, okay, well, how safe should a workshop be? And then suddenly kind of falling on what was a kind of a career in health and safety. So kind of taking it out of the workshop and then going, okay, there is this course at university at Nottingham Trent. It looks like the right kind of course for me. And just kind of getting out of the tools and off the workshop floor and finding my way kind of, I don't know, to a career in health and safety, really.
There's quite a lot of people that seem to have followed a similar path, having been injured or having been witness to an accident or something of that nature, and then ended up in a career in health and safety. So you ended up in O2 for quite a number of years then. How did that all come about?
Yeah, so I was working for Serco Defence and Aerospace. I'd been there 2 years. We were doing a lot of facilities management contracts and radar maintenance, real sort of work services packages, which covers everything. It's amazing experience. You know, you'd go to places that the public can't go. And obviously I can't talk about right now, but, you know, they're mega exciting. but I kind of got to a point. It was based down south in a place called Hook. That's where the HQ was for Serco. I think it still is. And I actually just moved to O2 because they had a department that was based in Leeds. So I wanted to move north. The opportunity came up. I'd already worked for Vodafone for about a year. I'd enjoyed the telecoms industry. And I thought, you know what, I'd really like to go back into it. And I met a guy who was at the head of safety then at the time, and the guy was called John Lyons, and he was just a fantastic manager, and just meeting him for the first time, I was like, God, I've got to work for you. You know, it's that kind of boss where you think, I've just got that rapport with him straight away off the bat. And we just hit it off. And, you know, after he retired, then someone else got his role, and then, you know, through obviously succession planning, I ended up kind of staying a lot longer than I thought I would in a business. And 11 years later, you know, that's when I left. But, you know, within sort of 6-7 years, I was group head of safety for, you know, looking over Czech Republic, Ireland, Germany, Spain in certain respects, you know, sort of a real kind of telecoms environment. But, you know, we had issues with obviously retail, customer service, network build, a real variety. And then towards the end of O2, they were really starting to kind of get into new markets. which were kind of offering services to Network Rail and, you know, kind of more of the high risk sectors, which all health and safety people think, wow, you know, that's real risk. You know, that's where it's happening. So it was a really exciting career, I must admit.
And now you're taking the move to create your own company and to help and support businesses, which is always a big step. You know, anybody I've spoken to that's done it, it usually takes a lot of thinking and soul searching to take the brave leap. So well done for that. And obviously we've picked up on each other and what we're each doing on LinkedIn. And I noticed you mentioned the importance of soft skills, which we have discussed with a number of our guests on the show. That's how we started the discussion of potentially collaborating here and getting into a little bit of the detail around it. So, Alex, for those listening, why do you think soft skills are so important? And can you let us know a bit about what sort of a role they've played in your own career?
Yeah, I mean, soft skills are... I think I first came across soft skills when I was working at a car dealership. I was working for Suzuki at the time. I was in the workshop, but they gave me the opportunity to be a service advisor. That was kind of a technical role mixed with a role where you would meet and greet customers. You would, you know, give them what they wanted in terms of listening to them, negotiating around, you know, the price of something that needed to be fixed, and ultimately dealing with, you know, issues around, okay, they're worried about the cost of something, and or we had done something wrong potentially, like, you know, most companies at some point have to sort of say sorry. And Suzuki were really cool because what they said was, well, actually, why don't you come on this course called Say and Do the Right Thing? So we were based in Lincoln at the time, and I drove all the way down to Crawley. I'd never been that far south in my life. And, you know, I was about 18 at the time. And I sat in this training course, and they just explained, look, you know, these things called soft skills. You know, you need to start using them. This is what it's like, you know, when you meet and greet a customer, that's what they expect. And just honing my listening skills at such a young age, I was like, oh, wow, you know, it is about listening and, you know, how you can help that customer and also see it from their point of view. And I always remembered that, like, you know, they are people, you need to give, you know, a great customer experience. How do you do that in the right way?
It's something that, as we've already discussed, you don't necessarily get trained on. How did you then develop those skills, and, you know, how did that sort of manifest itself further in your career and become so important to you?
Yeah, I mean, soft skills, you know, you're not going to get them overnight, and it takes time to kind of develop your own style. And that's the key thing, is not to kind of, you know, go out there and maybe you've looked at some books, that kind of self-development books around soft skills. You've got to find what you're really good at, you know. And I always think that, you know, if you're very good at listening and that's kind of your main skill, great. If you're very good at negotiating, or, you know, you're good in sort of engaging, I think you need to find where you can most add value to a business, or even just to sort of support your career. So for me, my listening skills weren't actually that honed when I first started in health and safety. I was too worried that I was doing the wrong thing. You know what it's like, Richard, when you've got your first safety role, you're like, you know, a chicken in the headlights, aren't you? Just, or a rabbit in the headlights, I should say. You're worried that you're going to do things wrong, because it's, you know, you've got this weight on your shoulders, like, this is criminal law, this is legislation. You've got to help a business function, but also you've got to make sure that they're protected. So early on, I was working for Costains, and to be honest, they were really cool. They let me go out on my own and do my own audits. I was working with a guy called, I think it was Jeff Porteous at the time. He'd been in the business a while, and I was kind of just learning his style, his soft skills. And he was quite a direct guy, been in the military. So actually, from that point of view, I was learning how to be more direct in the construction industry, and that's where we were at. And some of those more direct skills that Jeff had really worked well. And on some construction sites, it was really needed because there was a lot of pressure on. And in that sector, you know, your margins aren't big. So there is a lot of, what would I say in the nicest possible way, things can go wrong and cost a lot of money, if I can say that. And so therefore, the construction team has to work together. But also, because there's a lot of contracting out, it's influencing people that you don't have direct control over. And through Jeff's sort of style, I was learning how to kind of do that. And, you know, in those high risk environments, things can change really quickly. So you have to have those kind of more management, but a little bit of leadership there as well to say, I'm going to make this decision. And I learned quite quickly to say, I'm going to make this decision because I think this could end up in something quite serious. So I wasn't kind of suddenly into a leadership position or a management position. I was kind of down there with the guys. I remember in one instance, I was telling them to get out of an excavation. We hadn't, you know, done the right thing. But, you know, we learned from it. And, you know, everyone was like, yeah, do you know what? That just needed to be done. So, I mean, I'm not saying that was an issue with Costain. It was a subcontractor. But, you know, it is about kind of working with the teams and supporting them.
I suppose you've just highlighted there how important it is to understand your audience, and having been in the construction industry myself, I completely get what you're saying in terms of that type of environment, sort of high pressure in terms of time and cost. Yeah. And sometimes a difficult audience in terms of trying to engage and influence them on certain aspects, maybe more so than in some other environments.
Yeah.
How important is that, do you think, to gauge your audience, Alex, and manipulate your approach accordingly?
You've got to be a chameleon, Richard. You're absolutely spot on. You can't speak to a senior leader in O2 the same as you would want to speak to a guy digging a hole in on a construction site, you know, or, you know, trying to find cables and, you know, do some sort of Cat and Jenny scan. You know, you've just got to get to their point of view. And I think one of the key things is, you know, I think there's a Chris Voss, who's a FBI negotiator. I've just been watching some of his videos. Absolutely fantastic. And he says, do you see what I see? And that's, you know, he's talking to, you know, the kidnapper, and he's trying to get to a point where he's working with that kidnapper and saying, I understand. I do see what you see. And that stuck with me because I'm thinking, yeah, because I've been on the tools, you know, I was a car mechanic, basically. I understand how hard it is to actually deliver an engineering solution or, you know, even just dig a hole in the ground, how much effort that takes and what you get in terms of pay. So, you know, how much commitment are you actually giving to that role? Maybe, you know, you're just pushing harder because you need to pay the bills. Whereas if you're in a setting where someone's being paid to manage a multi-million pound project, they've got a different set of pressures. They've got multiple things they've got to think about. When you go into the room, you might only have 10 minutes just to kind of deliver something quite compelling. And that means that you've got to prepare for that. So it's very different, but you'll learn it. You'll just have to put yourself in those positions and you know, also just take some ideas that have worked for other people. You know, and I think that's the great idea about this podcast, is kind of sharing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hopefully we can help some people today. You know, it's really important, the point you're touching on about understanding your context. And a big fear for a lot of people, I suppose, would be when you're thrust into these situations with different audiences, or, you know, a group of people that you maybe haven't had time to consider what your approach should be, then I guess it all boils down to, you know, switching it over to listening and then adjusting your approach from that point. And that's not something that, you know, we should gloss over. I think it's a really, really important skill, I guess, from all walks of life, but certainly in the health and safety profession.
I think there's a big issue about management style, and I think that's alluding to sort of like influencing style as well. So certain managers will have either more kind of like a I think comes from stress, actually. It's like the stress mm-hmm. analysis looks about, you know, CIPD says most people leave their managers because of their management style. You'll end up facing certain management styles that are quite aggressive, or they'll be quite passive, or you'll find that, you know, you just don't know where you stand with someone. So in a way, you feel that you're not getting traction because of their style doesn't really match your style potentially. You don't seem to see a eye to eye, but yeah. It's being quite factual really, really helps. Really just sticking with your facts and going in there and just sort of saying, actually, look, this is the scenario. What do you think? Can I get some input from you? That's kind of where I'm at. I've had some difficult conversations with people. I think we shouldn't shy away from those.
Alex, I think we've covered the why pretty well here in terms of how important it is for us to hone our approach so that it's relevant and relatable to whichever audience we're serving. In your opinion, how then do we go about developing the skill set and, you know, training ourselves up to execute properly on it?
So, yeah, I agree, Richard. You know, how can someone do that? Now, for me, my kind of journey started, obviously, we talked about my time with Suzuki in the motor trade. But ultimately, I felt that I had an issue around soft skills. I felt that my influencing skills weren't particularly honed. So I can remember, sat on the beach, I think it was either in Lanzarote or somewhere like that, and I actually had a Jack Welch book in front of me. And I remember reading it, and it melted. The actual binding came apart. My wife's looking at me, reading this book about influence. I think it was about management, actually, but it had loads in about influencing, leadership, communication, engagement. And it just started to peel about. And I thought, I think we were there for a week. And I just like started reading it. I got obsessed with it because I was like, I know nothing about this. I'd done a degree in health and safety and we hadn't really touched on all this stuff. So I was a complete greenhorn. And that's where I think most people should start. Don't go out and just start spending loads of money on courses or, you know, just thinking, oh God, you know, where should I go? Just get a Jack Welch book or get, you know, a book from Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. You know, if you really want to go into influence, kind of start looking at Robert Cialdini's book, that's Influence. That's a really good one. And that's how I started, is really the basics, like what can I do to make people feel more comfortable to actually engage with me? And then from there, I actually started to ask my boss at the time, could I just do a few presentations or can I just put myself in a position where I'm going to have to start talking to groups, to communicate a message, you know, not being shy in coming forward and dealing with what I call is the monkey chatter, the point where your mind's kind of turning on you saying you're not good at this, you've made another mistake, you've embarrassed yourself. I know people would probably call that, you know, go and do some mindfulness or go and, you know, do some meditation to kind of calm that monkey chatter down. But literally, I think a lot of that is to do with practice about, you know, going out and finding those situations. So if you're not the head of department or you're not kind of a senior guy and you're dictating, you know, where people are working and you are an advisor, you need to start thinking right now about your career, but also getting those opportunities to be a influencer, to be a decision maker, and then see how you react to those situations and then start looking at the gaps. So for me, the gaps was I wasn't good at communicating. I went really red in presentations, or I can remember going to, you know, I was at Shell at Bacton Gas Plant. My boss was away. He said, do you know what? We've got the monthly kind of briefing to the guys. So that's kind of like 50 engineers in a room and you have to do the update. And I was like, I'm really not going to like this. I'm really worried. But you know what? I thought, I know those guys don't want me to look bad and fail. I know they're going to probably take the mick, but I'm just going to do it and just put myself in that situation.
I think that really is fundamental here, isn't it? You know, to become a practitioner and put yourself out of your comfort zone. Sometimes it's easy just to plod along and not force those challenges on yourself.
Yeah.
But you really need to if you want to develop, don't you?
You do. And then, you know, you can put in your CV, you know, and you can go in and talk about, oh, God, I did this. You know, they always put that question, isn't it? You know, have you ever failed or anything like that? And what they're really asking is, have you ever put yourself in a situation where, you know, you put yourself in harm's way? You know, like you had to do something, and you saw that character, isn't it? That grit, they call it now. And I love the fact that you can, you know, create a scenario where you can, you know, you can even call a meeting yourself, can't you? You know, you can call, you know, lead on a toolbox talk if you're probably in construction industry, or you want to create a strategy, particularly now around stress, you know, which is a real theme. And I'm glad that's creating a lot of traction. But there's those gaps that need filling, and we need people to come forward and do amazing things and communicate well, engage well, influence well, negotiate well. And you just got to try these techniques out, whether you've learned them from a book or a mentor. And that's what I'd say is you need – the second part is really find a mentor, someone that's going to give you – critique you in your way. You're not trying to be the next Richard Branson. You know, you're you, and you're you for a reason, and you're in that position. And actually, you need a mentor as well, because – health and safety can be quite a lonely place. I mean, I did a lot of work in O2 with, IT security. It's a very similar theme. You know, you're having to look at the whole business. You're having to kind of influence at multiple levels. But actually, it could be quite lonely if there's not a big team. And health and safety teams aren't that big generally in large businesses. You've probably got 5 or 10 people. In construction, there'll be many more of you because of the risk. But ultimately, you're going to have to make decisions quickly. You're going to have to look good. Your brand's got to be good as well. So, you know, you walk into a room and people got to respect you. You only get respect through trust and through really kind of building your reputation. And it just takes time, you know, and, you know, you've got to find those mentors, those people in those businesses that want to help you. And there are people in any business, I can tell you, there will be someone that just wants to help. And that's what I love about people. There will be someone that's really compassionate. It's like, you know, I just want to help that health and safety guy or girl out. I want to be part of that. It is an exciting subject. I think people are really hard on themselves in this profession. It is exciting. We've just got to show how exciting it is and how different we can be. That's the point.
Would you suggest to people to reach out for mentorship from people that are outside of the profession?
Yeah, I would. I think you probably need a few, actually. I think people that have kind of been there and, you know, and done the kind of, not even heads of, you know, some people are really, really strong at a management position, a health and safety management position. You know, I know people that either work for me or I know in other organizations, and I thought they've certainly got the caliber to be a senior person, but actually they're very, very good at what they do. Not just technically, their influencing skills are brilliant as well. But what I've learned as well from outside the profession is, you know, you've got to do it, because whether you're looking at a sales technique, I know we don't really say we sell, but, you know, Richard Denny, he's no longer with us, but he's got a great book as well. And, you know, when he says, you know, someone says no to him, he actually says this term, no, not right now. It means that it could, tomorrow could be yes. And I always remember that, you know, if you get a no, it means no, but not right now. It's in my head, this little sort of voice. And those techniques help you stand back up and think, actually, I could make progress here and not get disheartened. Obviously, you know, picking up other types of books, I've got to say, you know, just the Robert Cialdini book, obviously he's not a mentor, but, you know, the amount of videos I've watched of him, you almost become sort of his student. And, you know, to use some of those techniques about social proof, likability, authority, you know, there's six actually, but they really do work when you use them in a safety context or a health and safety context when you talk about health, well-being, etc.
Yeah, I like the way you're alluding to these approaches that are not intrinsically health and safety or environment related or compliance related or anything like that. And you know, this is the whole point of this podcast, Alex, is to introduce new ideas and encourage people to get out of their comfort zones and you know, read things and take information in that they normally wouldn't associate with the profession perhaps, and try and apply those ideas you know, to the context that they're in. And as you just said, I see a lot of opportunity for that myself. So it's good to hear, you know, that you have used some strategies and applied them really well in the health and safety context. Is there any one particular skill that you see as, you know, fundamental to this above all others?
I think in my career, you know, I've moved to different sectors. I've kind of got a, you know, I'm not an expert in one area. I've kind of got a broader idea around things. I think to me, looking at all those different sectors, it's listening. If I'm really honest, it's not trying to be the first person to speak every time in a meeting. It's sitting back, learning what the drivers are, like what are they really wanting? I mean, ultimately, everyone wants to sort of say, how are you going to help me? That's what they want. They want you to help them in some way, shape or form. If you go in there with a health and safety requirement, you might not even have written a business plan. This is sometimes the problem, is you go in and you go, you know, do you know what? You've got all these risks, all these problems. Your people aren't trained. This is quite a negative situation. Rather than flipping it on its head and going, I can really help you. I see that you're trying to deliver this project. I see you're under pressure. I've listened to you. I understand your world to a point, and this is what I can do to make life really simple and easy for you. And I think that's the key, is to make things really simple, really basic. And then if it needs more detail, you work on it together. And I just really like the fact is, I don't know if it was the Mark Evans, who's now the CEO at O2, I can't recall it, the actual time, but it might have been. He just said, you know, just do 60%. I thought, really? It's like 60%. Why would I just do 60%? You know, when I'm at work, I want to do 100%. I want to look like I'm, you know, the best you've ever seen. But what he's meaning is just go in there with 60%, because ultimately that might be good enough. Or it might be that Mark or another person that has influence will want to actually change things, move things, and actually create a better solution. So we go in there ultimately with a little bit of compliance on, but also we're looking at business improvement, quality, potentially security. We're trying to wear a few hats, but we're also alluding to the fact is that we know that they're going to come back with some ideas. And that's the important thing. So if you go in with everyone likes to be listened to. So if you go into a meeting and you say, I've got 100% the solution, immediately people are like, well, aren't you going to listen to what I think? So you've spent 3 or 4 weeks potentially on this solution. You go in and people don't buy it. Why do people don't buy it? It's because you haven't given them a chance to be listened to. So maybe you've done no engagement, no collaboration, and you go in and you go, this is the set idea. And I've seen it before. I've done it myself where I've gone in and thought, this is it. This is going to work. And you've completely missed the point. So Mark's saying that a lot of the time we go in thinking we've got the perfect solution, both for customers and internal customers. And actually, we've not got it. So go in with that 60% solution. Give them that opportunity to either look at adding on or actually saying, do you know what, that does fit.
Actually, funny you should say about not being the first person to speak, or, you know, a lot of the time when we're in group discussions, and it's you know, who can be the loudest often becomes the main theme. But I was listening to someone, you know, Simon Sinek.
Yeah.
Just randomly watched something there yesterday. It was a clip of him talking about the importance of being the last person to speak in a meeting and holding fire, you know, the whole time, which obviously relates to what you're saying about listening and really understanding what the problems of the people that you're in the room with are, and then only then, you know, deciding on what you want to input into that conversation. And if you can be the last person to speak, then often you can have much more influence.
Absolutely. And the issue we sometimes have is that health and safety is owned by the health and safety team. And I was always saying, no, to a point, we can support the strategy. We can, you know, ultimately, you know, the COO or the CEO owns health and safety through obviously signing the policy. We're here to guide, support. If there is some way that we can provide a service to the business which supports the end goal, which is obviously creating a safe, healthy, and, you know, great workplace that delivers this business solution to the customer. But that needs to be also owned by all the levels of management. And it's that what we're trying to do. I hear, because I teach on the NIBOS certificate and diploma on my own IOSH courses, I hear people saying, but it feels like it's all me. And that's when I go, it really shouldn't. What's wrong? Why is that happening? And they kind of explain this kind of, I don't know, there's no forum, there's no engagement, there's no ability to kind of work with senior leaders and say, do you know what, actually, if we really look at this, actually the ownership is supposed to be across the business. It's supposed to be integrated, like we've done with quality, potentially, like we've done with other kind of like KPIs. You know, we want that to be owned. And I can remember working and with organizations, and, you know, I'm not going to name them, but I'd go, God, we've got a massive gap here. And do you know what? You're the revenue that this product's creating. Actually, you could easily fund a position, and I would be writing business cases to fund health and safety positions actually within those departments, not in my department, because I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to create a huge, great corporate solution. I actually wanted it down at the sharp end, because that's where the influence is, and they can be part of the team, as it were, the delivery team. So that's how I kind of changed, actually, over the years. I wanted it to be more owned at that level rather than build an empire, which I think actually is quite wrong. We shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, I agree. I very much agree. And we've touched on similar points before. I think in general, the sort of management systems end of things is leaning more towards that progressive outlook and spreading responsibility better than what we are currently.
Yeah.
Something we didn't get into detail on, but just maybe something for a light touch for people. Whenever it comes to engaging and influencing, would your approach change whether you're trying to engage with the shop floor level, middle management, or senior leadership, you know, whichever level of the organization you're actually addressing? Would that approach change in any sort of tangible way that you could share with us?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. You know, you've got people, you know, I think all levels of the business are important. So whether, you know, it's a cleaning operative, you know, through to someone doing some engineering solution or kind of going all the way up to the top, I treat everyone with the same sort of level of respect, and I listen to what they've got to say. They're kind of in their world. That kind of style doesn't change, but the kind of way that I speak changes. So I'll be talking about, you know, what are your demands? You know, is there something that could be done? What can I feed up to the top, because actually I've got the ear of someone within that department. That's what I'll be sort of saying at that kind of operative level, because what they want to hear is, okay, how can I generally speaking, how can I have more control over my job? Because at that level where you're being directed more, and unfortunately, that's kind of like if you look at most organizations now, you'll have a quite strong hierarchy. It's starting to go, I must admit. So things are starting to change. But the organizations I've worked for in the last sort of 16 to 20 years have a hierarchy. And at that hierarchy, down at the bottom end, they don't have, and I've been there, you don't actually have that much control. So if someone come, if you go up to them and say, you know, what's the few things that could be done, they'll almost allude to some level of control, whether it's a flexibility or they would like to do something different or they want to be heard a bit more. And I really take that and I go, okay, absolutely. Actually, why don't we look at your engagement into a forum, you know, where you can talk more openly about the issues you're facing, and just giving them that doesn't have to be a big change. It massively motivates them. So you've got their ear that, and ultimately they start telling you about things and it really helps you in your role. So just giving that opportunity. When you get to sort of middle management, we're talking about spinning plates, aren't we? We're like, there's so many plates to spin that ultimately what they want you to do is give them opportunity to obviously look at their demands. Like, okay, if you're struggling to finance or budget for health and safety, you're almost kind of saying, okay, well, how can I help you make it simple? And you're using words around resourcing, budget, negotiation, maybe they've got some really strong KPIs to hit, and that's come from the top. So you've got to kind of get into their world of what are your demands? Maybe they're multiple demands, and how can I make it simple for you to kind of include health and safety in your role, because that's what we want them to do. Add that in.
I really like the way you pinpointed the importance of treating everyone with equal respect. For me, that is really critical. I really am a believer that respect should be earned and that it should also be reciprocal. So how did your approach continue to develop then, Alex, as you move further on up?
And as you go further up the organization, it's more about influencing them. They've got more control over their roles, generally speaking. They generally speaking set the strategy, they set the KPIs for everyone else, and you have to get in there early, because you know at some point in the year they're all going to be reset again. And when they get reset, if the budgets aren't there and you miss that boat, you'll be knocking on their door and you'll be going, oh, by the way, you've got a massive compliance gap, or I think this could be a real issue for you in the future, or that product you're about to launch, you didn't upfront it with enough preliminaries or budget around that, or that contractor, you know, isn't compliant, etc. But if you've missed that round of new KPIs or new objectives or their personal objectives, then you're massively on the back foot. So I'm always looking at that senior level. So like, when does that change? How can I get in there? What are their pain points? Know more about them. And it's much more about how can I influence and get that trust? Who's my sponsor? Who's going to get me in the door? And then at that next level, that board level, it's, you know, you don't get much time with those guys. And when either you see them walking along, you know, maybe in an office, maybe some organizations, you wouldn't go up to the CEO or the COO or O2, you would do, you know, you'd go, hi, how's it going, Mark, or, you know, or Derek, you know, you'd, you know, and certainly my boss was really open, Adrian was a really cool guy. You would just have that great respect and you would have that. But some organizations I worked in, you just wouldn't have that. You wouldn't actually see them. It was kind of like, you know, oh God, have you ever seen a CEO? You know, so when you have the opportunity, it can take months to prepare for that conversation if you never see them. So you have to go in there with a real sense of doing some research around what are the business priorities, maybe even what the financials look like. Has it been a good quarter or a bad quarter? What kind of mood are they going to be in? You know, are we getting them at the right time? Is it the best time to influence? You know, speaking with their PA, like what's happened recently, when should, negotiating with them and talking to them, and then looking to kind of bounce your ideas off someone that is really close to the board, I had that, so I could kind of have multiple inputs into the messages that I was going to kind of put forward. And also, don't go in there calling out red flags. If you're going to call out a red flag, as I would say, something really serious at that level, you know it's going to go all the way back down to the chain. And unless you've gone and spoke to all those people and said, you know what, I'm going to call this out, you're going to lose your network. You're going to lose some of those people that potentially might have had your back. So I know that sounds a bit awful, but that's the reality. You've got to, don't give anyone surprises, I would say. I've learned in the past. Yeah. And I've had my fingers burnt, so I'm just openly sharing that.
What you're sort of alluding to there seems to be the more, and I would very much agree with you, is the further up the chain, as it were, that you go, then the more planning and sort of foresight you need before approaching the people to have influence. And it's a challenge for a lot of people, is the mystique around senior leadership and the ability to influence and engage with them. So hopefully we can discuss that in more detail. I know you have some experience throughout your own career, Alex, of approaching people at a very high level. It'd be awesome to share some actionable tips with people in the next episode to let them know how you actually approached it and what sort of ways that they can have success in doing the same thing. How does that sound?
Yeah, Richard, it'd be great. Yeah, thanks for having me. And I look forward to speaking to you next week.
Until then, can you let the audience know where we can find you with your new projects, Alex? We haven't really touched on the specifics of that much.
Yeah, so you can find me at prosafetymanagement.co.uk, and I'm running sort of IOSH courses, managing safety courses throughout the year. I also do in-house courses, and generally I can support you around potentially some consultancy or anything really. I'm actually really excited to kind of take some of my experience and support, other professionals and other businesses.
Cool. Well, thank you again for coming on. And we look forward to catching up with you again in the next episode for a little bit about how to approach those people at the top of the tree.
Thanks.
Well, guys, that's it for this episode of the Safety Podcast. I hope you got as much value from that conversation with Alex as I did. As you've heard, he's a real positive, super friendly guy, and hopefully you'll look forward to joining us for the second episode of this series. We'll be back again soon, delivering you more value in the health, safety and environment space. If you haven't already done it, don't forget to subscribe on whichever platform you're listening on, so you don't miss out on some of the great stuff that we have coming up. Until next time, keep pushing things forward and keep having a positive impact. We'll chat to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Safety Podcast. We would love you to tell us which episode you would like to hear. Don't forget to give us a shout at safetypodcast.com.